for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. President Trump commented on the statement his attorney Rudy Giuliani made on Fox News that he repaid his lawyer for hush money paid to Stormy Daniels. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
The president tweets the money he repaid Michael Cohen had nothing to do with the campaign. He says Cohen received a monthly retainer from which he entered into a private contract between two parties, known as a non-disclosure agreement. The president says that agreement was used to stop what he calls Daniels' false and extortionist accusations that she'd had an affair with Trump. The president said last month he knew nothing about $130,000 being paid to Daniels days before the election. Sagar Magani at the White House.
A source tells Reuters news agency that the U.S. government is looking into reports that three Americans detained in North Korea have been relocated from a labor camp to a hotel near Pyongyang ahead of a planned summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Reuters' Ed Giles has more on the detainees.
Kim Hak-song and Tony Kim were detained about a year ago as tensions over North Korean missile and nuclear tests were reaching their peak. They were both working at the Pyongyang University of Science and Technology, opened in 2010 and founded by evangelical Christians. North Korea accused them of committing, quote, hostile acts against the country. And a third, Kim Dong-chul, was sentenced to 10 years hard labor for subversion. None of them have appeared in public since being sentenced.
That's Reuters reporter Ed Giles. On Wall Street, in U.S. stocks, the Dow erased a nearly 400-point loss to close higher. This is VOA. Armed gunmen stormed into the International Committee of the Red Cross compound in Somalia's capital. Crystal Wells, the regional spokeswoman for the ICRC, provided details.
Last night at around 8 p.m., one of our colleagues, a German nurse, was taken by armed men in the Somali capital, Mogadishu. This was a woman who was spending her days helping others, providing life-saving care to some of the country's most vulnerable people.
The ICRC uses private security guards. Neighbors said they didn't hear any confrontation or gunshots coming from the compound. The organization says it's in contact with authorities to try to secure her release. Iran's foreign minister took to YouTube Thursday to criticize President Donald Trump's threat to withdraw from the nuclear deal, saying Iran will not renegotiate or add on to the atomic accord.
On 11 occasions since, the UN nuclear watchdog has confirmed that Iran has implemented all its obligations.
There was no immediate response from Washington. As the world marks Press Freedom Day Thursday, journalists from around the world face arrest, intimidation, or even death for doing their jobs. And while the list of the world's most censored countries is more or less the same, new hostility against media is emerging from previously friendly quarters. Rights organizations say press, or freedom of the press rather than improving, is increasingly at risk. VOA's Aisha Tanzim has more.
In Europe, the region with the most respect for press freedom, two reporters were shot dead in the last 1 year for doing their job. In India, according to RSF, troll armies on social media, allegedly hired by Prime Minister Narendra Modi, attacked journalists critical of the government. A female journalist, Gauri Lankesh, was assassinated for criticism of right-wing Hindu extremism. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
El Salvador's government has approved an initiative presented by women's rights groups for a national alert over gender-based violence. Among the measures is a campaign to combat sexual harassment in public institutions, emphasizing prevention of sexual violence and killings of women. Government institutions have 10 days to present their plans for aligning with the initiative. President Salvador Sanchez Serén called Thursday for forceful actions to diminish gender violence in the Central American nation, which has one of the highest homicides rates in the world. This is VOA.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda denies restricting the movement of Congolese refugees in Rwanda.
Refugees are free to move around. They're free to get out of the camp and do their business as usual, though we have the police presence in that camp due to the security that has prevailed in that camp.
Jean-Claude Rahaban is the Director of Refugees Affairs at the Rwanda Ministry of Disaster Management and Refugees Affairs. Burundi welcomes opposing views of its upcoming May 17 constitutional amendment referendum. Zimbabwe's top foreign investor, China, has become a top button issue in this year's elections. And this week's terrorist attack on Libya's Election Commission headquarters has thrown into turmoil that country's parliamentary election.
Okay, come on, come on.
The suicide bomber attack Wednesday against Libya's Electoral Commission headquarters left a trail of death and destruction.
That's VOA correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo, Egypt. Gambia celebrates first World Press Freedom Day after Yahya Jammeh. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Rwandan police have increased their presence at the Kiziba refugee camp following recent unrest there. The Ministry of Disaster Management and Refugee Affairs has decided to dissolve the Refugees Executive Committee as it has launched an investigation into the causes of the Kiziba camp. The authorities say they are also conducting routine patrols to enhance public order and crime prevention. The unrest at the camp came over caught in food rations. The UN Refugee Agency was not immediately available for comment. Jean-Claude Rahaman is the director of the Refugee Affairs Unit in the Ministry of Disaster Management and Refugee Affairs.
That's not true. Refugees are free to move around. They're free to get out of the camp and do their business as usual, though we have the police presence in that camp due to insecurity that has prevailed in that camp for a couple of weeks. But so far, the situation is just coming back to normalcy. We don't have any problem now. The police is doing its normal business of checking whoever gets inside the camp or for security reasons.
Are refugees allowed to grow food or work as a means of supporting themselves?
Yeah, they have that right. Unfortunately, we don't have really enough space for them to grow crops. But for those who can afford, for instance, to rent some plot of lands, they are free to do so. I can give an example. In Nyabiheke camp, we have some refugees who have grouped themselves into cooperatives and who just have some lands where they cultivate, where they grow crops, so that they can just supplement to what they get.
Tensions flared a few months ago when the police were accused of using excessive force to put down protests. Are there talks between the Rwandan government, UNHCR, and refugees over how to defuse tensions?
There are no talks between the government and UNHCR and refugees because we don't have fights between those sides. We are just fulfilling our responsibilities as the government. We are just ensuring that refugees are secure and in safe environment, enjoying their rights, but they should also respect the laws of the land, instruction from the government officials and even partners. So if we have some of them trying just to interfere or do wrong things, we cannot really tolerate that as a government.
In almost every statement of UNHCR, it considers tensions in Kiziba camp as a confrontation that resulted to several deaths. Do you think that's notified? Don't you think talks can make situation stable?
We've been facing some unruly groups of refugees, especially the youth, trying just to confront the police and trying to prevent the police from conducting their normal patrols. And this is the reason why we had, unfortunately, some people who have been killed and others injured. We don't think that there was any need to hold talks with the refugees, because refugees are there. We have to protect them as the government, but they should also abide by the laws of the country and different instructions.
That was Jean-Claude Rahman, director of the Refugee Affairs Unit in the Ministry of Disaster Management and Refugees Affairs. He was speaking with the reporter Eugene Uwimana from Rwanda's capital, Kigali. Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party says it welcomes opposing views of the country's upcoming constitutional amendment referendum scheduled for May 17. If approved, the amendment would remove term limits and effectively allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to seek additional terms in office. Burundi's Roman Catholic bishops denounced the referendum. But Nase Mutune, National Secretary in charge of information and communication for the ruling CNDD-FDD party, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the opponents of the constitutional amendment have been campaigning against it freely and without any hindrance.
The referendum first is the result of the will and the wish of the citizen. And among them, some may be against, some may be for it. And we understand and welcome all views about the referendum. What we cannot question is any idea that will come to disturb the process of the referendum. But as we said, and as we proclaimed even yesterday when we were launching the campaign, we called our militants, we called all the citizens to be tolerant and to listen, to welcome all those who campaign for or against the referendum.
Opposition parties are saying that this referendum is a ploy by the ruling party, the CNDD-FDD, to try to change the constitution that will allow President Nkurunziza to seek additional terms.
When opposition is saying something against the ruling party, it's normal. They are in their fight for power. And what you should know is that as the ruling party, we are not the initiator of this referendum, of this constitution amendment. Is the citizens themselves, through dialogue, the dialogue that have been throughout the whole country and conducted freely and transparently, and people have given their views for amendment of the Constitution. So we also are citizens, and we are very proud and happy that the government have taken into account the views and the will of the citizen, and we are following it. So when the opposition are saying that is for term limits, is for granting, I don't know what, it's their fight. They are in opposition. But what we can say now is that we need just to look on facts, not only in the comments of those and others. And, you know, currently even the opposition is campaigning freely throughout the country, calling the citizen to vote no. So that's a step that we need to recognize as a democratic country.
Neighbors like Uganda and Rwanda have amended their constitution. Now, the constitution that were amended by these countries ensured that their president ran for additional terms. Are you denying that if this constitution is amended, President Pierre Nkurunziza cannot seek additional terms?
As I told you, we are not yet there. Now, we are amending the constitution following what the citizens have wished for. So when you're telling me about the neighbors that have done this and that, I would say that there's no way to compare Burundi to some countries here around, because Burundi is a democratic country, as you know. And we are proud people and proud citizens of this great nation. When the citizens have decided something and asked for it, we need to listen to them, because the ruling party that is ruling this country has its base in the citizens themselves.
Nase Mutune is the National Secretary in charge of information and communication for Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Bujumbura. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 4th. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Much of the debate surrounding Zimbabwe's upcoming election centers on the nation's largest foreign investor, China. President Emmerson Mnangagwa is quoting both China and the West, saying that Zimbabwe, after decades of pariah states, is open for business. But there are skeptics who say Chinese companies are either stealing from Zimbabwe or have not followed through on their promises. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg with reporting from Sebastian Mofu in Harare.
China has become a key talking point in the coming elections, with the ruling party cozying up to the deep-pocketed nation and the opposition warning that doing so is dangerous. Nelson Chamisa, leader of the opposition Movement for Democratic Change, has pledged to weed out Chinese investors, whom he accuses of exploiting Zimbabwe.
They are busy asset stripping my resources in Yuka.
Speaking in a mixture of English and Shona, he says they are busy asset stripping and looting our resources. So I said beginning in September when I get into office, I will ask the Chinese to come in a queue and interrogate their deals. We will send away all those with bad deals for Zimbabwe. The opposition is attempting to unseat the ruling ZANU-PF party, which has ruled since independence in 1980. Chamisa has mocked President Emmerson Mnangagwa's claim that Zimbabwe is open for business, saying that the nation needs to be choosier and only allow deals that truly benefit the people, not just elites and wealthy investors. Zimbabwe has faced tough U.S. and international sanctions for alleged human rights abuses and political repression under former President Robert Mugabe. One of the few sources of foreign investment has been China, which has pumped money into mining, chemicals, and textile projects. China Africa analyst Kubus van Staden of the South African Institute of International Affairs says he's not surprised to see China becoming a political football. He says the late President Michael Sata of Zambia ran on a populist anti-Chinese message in his 2011 campaign.
But then interestingly, after he came to power, that changed very quickly. Because I think once one is in power and one faces the reality of the investment environment, the relative influence of China in the whole world, then it becomes very difficult. That's kind of campaign talk, I think, more than governing talk.
Mnangagwa's first presidential visit outside the continent was to China, where in April he and President Xi Jinping spoke of a new chapter between the two countries. Derek Matyshak, a Harare-based analyst from the Institute for Security Studies, says he's not convinced much foreign investment has actually happened.
We are told that a lot of the FDI has come into the country. Government's official position is that $11 billion is earmarked for investment in the country. But when you start to analyze these deals, the details are vague. They are opaque deals. There's no actual concrete investment going on behind them.
All this talk, he says, distracts from the main question Zimbabwean voters are asking of the politicians who seek to lead them. What about the economy? Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Various Libyan factions are accusing each other of trying to postpone parliamentary and presidential elections following Wednesday's suicide attack against the headquarters of the country's electoral commission in Tripoli. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for the bombing, while the military spokesman in the east of the country downplayed the claim. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Okay, come on.
The suicide bomber attack Wednesday against Libya's Electoral Commission headquarters left a trail of death and destruction. Libyan TV showed the charred remains of the badly damaged building and reported that more than a dozen people had been killed. Arab media said the so-called Islamic State group claimed responsibility for the attack. Colonel Ahmed al-Masmari, military spokesman for the self-styled Libyan National Army in the east of the country, was skeptical of the claim. He says that there are gangs from the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda that were behind this attack. He says the Islamic State group claimed responsibility, but they claim that they are behind everything. He says for the Libyan army, the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic State, and Al-Qaeda are the same thing. Masmari said the Muslim Brotherhood is attempting to postpone presidential and parliamentary elections in Libya by tying them to a separate vote on revising the constitution. University of Paris political science professor Khatar Abu Diab also is skeptical about the alleged Islamic State claim of responsibility for the bombing.
Je crois que ces djihadistes existent. Ils ont des entités indépendantes, mais ils sont souvent utilisés.
He says these terrorists do exist and they have their own independent networks, but they frequently are manipulated by various countries. He notes that at one point it appeared that Islamic State was infiltrated by former Gaddafi elements, and now it looks like certain countries are manipulating them. One needs to look at who profits from the crime, he insists. Arab League head Ahmed Abu Ghait said earlier this week certain countries have stepped up funding to various local militia groups. UN Libya envoy Ghassan Salame said the internal and external tangents of the Libyan crisis need to be tackled.
فإن نظرت إلى سبل حل تلك النزاعات فإنه عليك أيضا.
He says the United Nations is working to resolve the internal conflict, but efforts must be made on the international and diplomatic front to reduce negative meddling and increase positive intervention. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Members of the Gambian media fraternity, government officials, and other stakeholders converged on Thursday at the University of the Gambia in Banjul to commemorate World Press Freedom Day, the first since dictator Yahya Jammeh fled the country. As VOA's Pandere Umbai reports, the government of President Adama Barrow has promised to scrap all draconian media laws passed by the Jammeh administration.
Climate of fear greeted Gambian journalists during dictator Yahya Jammeh's 20-year rule. Some journalists practiced self-censorship, while many were forced into exile. This was largely due to the oppressive nature of the Jammeh regime, which has been accused of killing 3 journalists since coming to power. Among those killed includes Deida Hydra, Ibrahim Achif Mane, and Pa Omar Barrow. Speaking at a Press Freedom Day forum in Banjul on Thursday, Information Minister Demba Ali Jawa said the days of dictatorship is over in the Gambia.
As far as the ministry is concerned, we are prepared to guarantee that there is total freedom of the press in this country. So we also want my colleagues, journalists, to help us in pushing ahead with the freedom of the press that we all are advocating.
The Gambian media is still faced with draconian media laws passed by the former Jammeh administration. For example, laws such as criminal libel, publishing fake news, among others, are still active in the law books of the Gambia. Demba Ali Jawa again.
We've already set up a committee of eminent personalities of various stakeholders, including members of the National Assembly, civil society, as well as members of the media, to look at the laws, make recommendations to the ministry, and we are definitely going ahead with amendments of the laws, and some of them, if necessary, repeal them completely.
Dr. Baba Gale Jallo is the Executive Secretary of Gambia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Dr. Jallo was among the journalists exiled by dictator Yahya Jammeh's government.
I feel very happy. I think this is a great change. 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been here. You wouldn't have been here. A lot of people have been here. The amount of questioning and critical thinking that I see in young Gambian journalists and the media over government actions and policies is very encouraging.
Encouraging indeed, but Dr. Jallo is concerned about the quality of journalism in the Gambia.
I feel that there is a lot of room for improvement. I think there is a lot of journalism out there, a lot of free journalism, but I think that a lot of the standards of journalism in this country needs to be improved. So that is one thing that people should consider.
The theme for the conference was keeping power in check, media, justice, and the rule of law. Among the delegates include David Kujabi, the spokesman for the Gambia Police Force.
The media is not here to make us fail. The media is here to see that we are accountable, and that should be welcome. If we want to take public office, we should be ready to be accountable. And working with the media to ensure that we succeed is supposed to be a salvation for us, because they are here to help us. If we go wrong, they will point it out.
The Gambia is now an open society. Relationship between the press and the government have improved over time. Ernest John Tomasi is a veteran Gambian journalist. She calls for concerted efforts to preserve Gambia's newfound freedom.
The onus lies on all parties. The state has its role. The citizens also have their roles so that we maintain the peace. We maintain the freedom. Freedom is sweet. Freedom is good. But we maintain it with responsibility and responsibility from both sides.
Delegates at the conference have called for fair and responsible reporting. They also call on journalists to continue to be critical and hold the new Barrow government accountable. For Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by Reporting.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the suspension of the Ethiopia First Division Championship by the Ethiopian Football Federation because the team manager beat up a referee on Monday after he had awarded a goal to their rivals. On Monday night, during a match between the clubs Wolwelo Adigrat and Defence in the capital Addis Ababa, players with Wolwelo protested the goal they said was unjustly awarded to the rival team. Images on state television ETV showed a member of the Wolwelo management team chasing the referee, pushing him to the ground and punching him at least once. Staying with football news, Harambee Stars' new coach, Sebastian Mnyee, believes Kenya can qualify for both the 2019 and 2021 African Cup of Nations with better preparations. Mnyee, who was unveiled as a Stars coach, his mandate is to ensure Kenya qualifies for a continental showpiece.
We concede too much goals against us, and we need to improve that. We need to score, but if you don't concede goals, it's better.
South Africa Premier Soccer League chairman Ivan Koza says he has never met nor had any contact with Jennifer Ferguson, the woman who has accused South Africa Football Association president Danny Jordan of raping her in the Port Elizabeth hotel room over 20 years ago. Danny Jordan has denied the charges brought against him by the Sweden-based Ferguson. However, according to reports this week, Danny Jordan's lawyer has opened a case against Koza, claiming he is trying to derail the Safa's hopes of winning the upcoming SAFA presidency elections by supporting Ferguson, a singer and former ANC member of parliament, by paying for her flights and accommodation to South Africa.
Ms. Jennifer Ferguson has issued a statement to the fact that I don't know her and she does not know me, and I have nothing to do with her case. I've contacted my bankers to investigate if there were any payments made through my credit card in favor of Fly Africa travel. Why, yeah, of course. For any flight or accommodation, or anything for that matter.
Staying with football news, Lamine Kabah-Bajo, president of the Gambian Football Federation, says the federation won't be intimidated by anyone ahead of the FIFA Congress vote on the host nation for the 2026 World Cup. The Gambia's football president is insisting that his country will back Morocco bid unequivocally. His comment is in an apparent response to U.S. President Donald Trump's threats to those challenging the joint bid by Mexico, Canada, and the United States. South Africa and Morocco are two African teams that will represent the continent at the 10th FASA International Wheelchair Basketball Tournament. The tournament comprises a total of 8 countries: Japan, Turkey, South Korea, China, Taipei, and Thailand, including host the United Arab Emirates. The 8 teams will be divided into 2 groups of 4 each, with a round-robin competition starting on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, May 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga have agreed to end their political animosity. A discussion on Kenyan politics on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.